Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
I don't know about you, but I'm starting to feel a spell coming along.
Oh boy.
As a certain someone has been cursed and hexed by the Lady of Misfortune. Oh, wait a minute. The Slaffus result came back, and the Wizards continue to win again, and Lady Maria continues her streak! So I take that a certain cohort.
So you could say that a certain someone's winning streak went from day to night?
Tyler. Listen, I've explained in the past in my winning streak, and everybody played Splatoon 2. You know, the people who agree with me are probably better players, and now, you know, we've moved on to other games. That being said, I think my losing streak has got to be double what my winning streak was at this point.
No,
like,
not
I feel
even close.
Like I've lost the past 2 years of Splatfests.
I think you're only at 5, and your winning streak was honestly like 9. Give or take.
I won a lot in a row in the beginning there.
You
but
did.
I have cooled off.
So, hey, we all have
Crash
our down periods. Alright, and I'm happy to see you. Joining us once again is King Koopa Keef.
Oh my god, did I walk into the wrong channel? I am so sorry.
Yes. How dare you interrupt our podcast?
Alright, I'm out. Peace.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, whether King Koopa Keef is here or not, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, so we're going to kick it off with, what have you been playing? And, King Koopa Keith, I think it's only appropriate since you have not been with us for a while, what have you been playing recently? I know you just got a new game today.
Yes, Sekiro. Sekiro and nothing but Sekiro. And guess what I'll be playing tomorrow? And
Kiro?
The day after that.
Kiro.
Well, some of the Division 2 as well, but mostly that. Yeah, I'm gonna play the game until I beat it.
And I'm just curious, are you playing in its native Japanese dubbing, or are you actually playing in English dubbing?
No, I left it all Japanese. It's the only way to play that
good
game.
Man.
It's the only
good
way to
man.
Play.
Good man.
It would seem kind of odd to have English dubs, when it's like, but this is, you know, this is a Japanese game in the Japanese period. Why would I play it in English?
Right.
Because, that's why. Because.
I actually talked to one of the voice actors, and comment with them, and like, apparently DC Douglas, aka Wesker, is a person who actually does the narration for the game as well. So DC Douglas, Stephanie Shea, some pretty big VAs helping with the VAs, so, I mean, again, pick preferences, all preferences.
So,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so besides, so, like, right now, I know you haven't done your review yet, but right now, what's your impressions of Sekiro?
Oh, it is an amazing game. It is very brutal. It is hard. If you've come off playing like Bloodborne or Dark Souls, this game is going to slap you in the face and remind you that I'm not like my cousins.
And to be clear, this is made by From Software.
That's it. It plays more like Tenku or a stealth game with action bits in it more than anything else. If you try to play this game like you would Dark Souls, you're not going to do well at all. It is very brutal. It has a very easy concept to grasp, but but playing the game itself, it eases you in, but then it goes from one to, holy crap, this is hard, what was happening? And the game really forces you to pace yourself, because if you go and think, I'm just going to kill these guys one by one, you're going to find yourself overwhelmed really quickly. This game was made to be challenging, where you approach enemies and you have to figure out how to fight them versus running in and just destroying everything, because that does not happen. I've played it several times and thought I was going to kill one enemy, and another one saw me, then he alerted his friends, and soon I was overrun by 6 or 7characters.
Oh.
And the bosses themselves are very hard. You need to learn how to parry and dodge a lot.
Right. Like, I'm not aware, like, it's one of the parents, like, you actually can sidestep when you see that red insignia, that red sign when it glows. You actually can parry that with the correct count parry. Like, for example, the sidestep
can
stab you.
It's just better to get out the way, because if you screw up, it's pretty much half your life right there.
Ah, okay. But again, risk versus reward kind of deal.
If I had to rate the game right now, it would get a 9 from me. It would get a nail.
Oh.
It is good.
What's the it's called Shadows Die Twice, right? And I think at some point I picked up the idea that there's some sort of death mechanic. When you die, do you just die, or is there some sort of catch?
So the name implies the actual mechanic of the game. So if you die once, you can come back to life within a period of 5 seconds. You can decide to stay dead, or you can resurrect yourself. And as long as you keep killing enemies, you'll refill that meter. So if you refill it and you die again, you can come back to life.
Okay.
So basically, as long as you keep killing enemies, preferably the bigger ones, you can keep coming back to life. However, the game has a downside. If you keep dying and resurrecting, you'll induce a sickness to the world called Dragon Rot, which makes people sick, and it can affect your gameplay. If you die too many times, characters or NPCs may say certain things to you differently, or they may not talk to you at all. So there's a good chance you can miss out on content because you kept dying over and over and over.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's no way to avoid it, because if you keep dying, the game automatically gives you an item that goes into your inventory, and that's it. It's like, you have this item now. Too bad. Sorry. You can't get rid of it.
That's sick.
Oh, okay. So that's what that was when I saw it, like, a different gameplay. I see.
Yeah. One big thing I will say about that, and I'll stop. The game has a really nice sense of accomplishment. When you actually kill an enemy, when you kill a boss, you're like, yeah, I freaking did it, versus, oh, that's nice, move on. And it has a really nice sense of verticality. When you get your grappling hook, you can just swing on the trees and swing onto rooftops and whatnot, and it's actually really nice. It's like, what is the name of the period again? I'm going to screw it up. Sengoku?
Sengoku period.
Sengoku period. You're Sengoku period Spider-Man.
That's a good sell.
It is so much fun.
All right. Will, how about you?
For me, it's nothing really much different. I've not been playing the Fire Emblem Heroes with the bunny banner, and just went through the paradox story of it, and jeez Louise, Loki. I know you're trying to trick Veronica and Bruno's storyline, but jeez Louise. Just gets weirder and weirder. And yeah, since Loki is going to be the Tempest Trial unit, seeing her artwork, yeah. Quite on the nose, to say the least. But overall, I'm just again grinding up the orbs on Fire Emblem Heroes, and the Aether Raids, and of course, naturally just going. I actually have seen the ending of Devil May Cry 5 for my brother's playthrough, and oh boy, it is so nice. See, now I'm just basically trying to play the game myself to actually reach the ending for myself instead of just watching my brother play. So I'm going through DMC 5, and also I actually had to go and get in touch with the new Overwatch patch with the new Overwatch Baptiste, which I heard is actually a good battle healer. So I need to get caught up in Overwatch. But overall, yeah, nothing much different. And of course, naturally, here and there, playing Tetris 99, which, yeah, also, didn't you have a story to share with us, Todd?
I do, but I'll wait my turn.
Okay, so yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Tyler?
I have been playing a couple different things. Of course, Super Smash Ultimate, that, as I've said, I will be playing that for the next 5 years, probably. And I have really settled in as Ness being by far my best character. Like, my Marth is solid. Like, I've gotten pretty good with him as well. But just something about Ness in this game clicks with me unlike any other character. I just feel like every one of his moves makes sense, and I know what I'm trying to do. I use his forward air to pick people's jumps off. I use his neutral air to edge guard. I use his PK fire as a kind of keep people at bay with those. I love the character's moveset in this game. And it's funny because he's always had the same moves, but in Ultimate, for whatever reason, I think the engine, he just clicks. He just works. And I've loved playing as him. And I've also been playing Monster Boy in the Cursed Kingdom. Thank you to Koopa Keith for the review code. I'll be reviewing that game for the Outer Haven. Hopefully I'll have my review up soon. I got to play a decent amount of it yesterday, but I was traveling all day today. So I haven't gotten quite as far along as I'd like to, but I'm working on that, so look forward to my review.
How do you like it so far?
Oh, it's really good. I love the art style. It's very charming. The music is really good. I just got transformed into the first transformation of the pig, and I escaped these sewers, and I'm back in this kind of sprawling. I really like the energy of the game. I think that's the thing that stands out the most to me. It's very lively, not unlike a lot of big Nintendo 2D platformers. The world really kind of comes to life, and I'm a huge fan of that in any platformer. If you want to make those games stand out, you need to have a colorful and vibrant world, and Monster Boy absolutely has that. I'm not super keen on the dialogue. There's a lot of exposition so far, early at least, and I mean, the story seems like kind of just a generic, you know, we need to have a story to push the plot along. I almost wish it was a little more open-ended, but outside of that, it's a really solid game.
Well, Tyler, if you need a game with a strong story with a little bit of an open ending, you know, there's a title called Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I read that this guy's game... review on The Outer Haven, and he loved this game so much.
Now, he is that reviewer was high when he wrote that review. I don't know.
The story is actually quite amazing. Even I have that.
The story
far,
is so generic. So I haven't read any plot summary. By the way, I just want to put that out there. I've not read any plot summary. I stopped at chapter 6. I wonder who the big bad guy is. Could it be the pale-skinned, white-haired, old-looking dude? I wonder if he's the bad guy. He helped me once, so I think, you know, maybe he's not a bad guy. But no, I'm 99% sure that he's going to turn out to be the main bad guy, and I'm going to have to defeat him.
Then you are wrong.
I don't believe you, but you know, I'm never going to know. But that Bishop guy is obviously the bad guy, and yes, not a great story.
Wrong. All right, anyway, as for me, I've been playing a couple different things, but my main one has been obviously Tetris 99, and I can happily say unto you both, as we talked about last week and last podcast, I have officially gotten a number one ranking. I have won a battle royale. In fact, I've won two. I have won two in the course of a week, and the first one was, I kid you not, a few hours after we did the last podcast.
Right.
So here's what happened. So I literally go into these games and I do not expect to win. I do not aim to win. I aim to survive. So I'm going through a few rounds and I'm doing okay in some and I'm doing terribly in others. You know, the usual thing. And then all of a sudden I'm playing this round and it says 10 players left. And I'm like, okay, so I'm in a kind of a tight situation. And so I'm just cranking away, you know, trying to get, you know, Tetris clears and as many clears as I can so I can keep it as low as possible. And then all of a sudden, this noise just fills up my screen. Click, 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 click. I'm like, what the heck is this? And then it says, oh, you won. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know I was in the final two or three. I was literally so focused on my own screen that I didn't even realize I was that close to winning, and then I won. So, yeah. Now, the second time I knew, because I was in an actual battle with this guy, because he was throwing things my way, I was clearing them, and I threw things back his way, and then he crapped out first. And so I have had now two first place finishes. I've had multiple second place finishes, as we talked last week, which is something I hadn't had before. Multiple third place finishes. So I've had quite a week of Tetris. So.
My tip, my cap to you, sir. I would love to watch you guys play this game because anytime I get down to the final two, it just I am incapable of keeping up, and I feel like the other person sends one batch of lines at me, and it's over because like you can't attack back until you clear what they have coming your way or whatever they have coming your way like attacks you, and I am incapable of keeping up. It is so frustrating.
Yeah, I agree with you. I played the heck out of that game when it first came out, which is the game that made me finally get my Nintendo Switch Online account in the first place, and I enjoyed it then, and ever since then, it's been like every time I start within the first couple of minutes, I just get knocked out. And I'm really good at Tetris, but it's like, are you really singling me out? What exactly is happening here?
It's just right. The way the game goes.
So I played it last night, and I was like, you know what? I'm done again. This is why I stopped playing you in the first place.
I just want to get a win so bad because Todd and Will got wins, and I get to see them on Twitter posting, "Oh, I won, Will, Nani, I did it. This is my 19th win today." And Todd's puts, "Oh man, here's my second victory this week," and here I am just losing and losing, and I put it aptly. I think I feel like Squidward in the crane game episode of SpongeBob where he's trying to win the prize and he can't win the prize, and SpongeBob keeps winning the prize and he gives up all of his money, including the deed of his house, just to win one time. And he finally does. I need that one win and I will never play again.
Tyler, in the words of Shia LaBeouf, don't let your dreams be dreams. Just do it. Do it.
Yeah. I'm going to one day.
Now, Tyler, if you're looking for a game that you can win and have a satisfying feeling, there's this title called Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Let me tell you about all the bosses I've had in game. Not one felt satisfying to beat. Not one.
You haven't gotten that far. Anyway, okay, we're going to stop there. I'm done. But seriously, keep trying. It took me forever. Again, I got my first victory last Thursday. Right after I was talking about how I've never gotten a victory either.
I get that they're calling it a battle royale, but the problem I had with that is when I play PUBG, when I play Fortnite, when I play Apex Legends, I have some sort of control on how I'm going to go out.
Yeah, yeah.
In what context? Because you could get hit from a sniper bolt from the blue and not see it coming.
And well, crap. I guess boss
probably just
out.
The mic unplugged. Just give him.
Ah, there we go.
Oh, he's gone.
Worse than that.
He gone.
I see. I think he meant like in the context of you can't pick like the pieces that you get, whereas in another loot game, like in another battle royales, you know, you can pick where you start and
right
like you have kind of more in that way. But you're right, I mean, it's not a perfect, you do have a ton of freedom in who you attack and how that all works. Like I'm pretty good at, like, my strategy right now at least is to get as many people attacking me as I can, because then you can, like, if you clear one line you send eight at somebody and you can get a bunch of KOs that way. But I mean, you do have a decent amount of control over who's targeting you and who you're targeting and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, Tetris is basically, again, as Tetris is limited, aside from, like, again, the other battle royals. But again, it's all preference and definitely varies.
There he is. It's raining bad over here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, same here.
That's weird.
All right. Do you want to just keep going, or?
Yeah, you can just cut out what I said. That's fine.
All right. Sorry about that, folks, but here we go. So we actually have a quite an interesting set of news to talk about today, which is actually why we brought Koopa Keith back on here. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. Now, the two really big pieces of news were the Nindies showcase and the Google Stadia news. But we're going to save the Google Stadia news for our main event tonight. So let's start it off with the Nindies showcase 2019. Wow, that was a long direct thing. It wasn't a direct, but it was a direct. It was a showcase, but
it honestly felt like a Nintendo Direct.
It,
like,
did.
There was a lot of huge
26.
News on this.
Yeah.
All right, so let's start off with one of the easily the biggest pieces of news: Swim Sanity. No, I'm kidding.
hey, I actually played Swim Sanity one time at the NYC Playfair, and it's actually pretty fun.
There you go. Okay, but no, I'm of course talking about Cuphead.
Is officially
coming to Switch, which Tyler has been hoping for quite some time, actually.
I have, and I've expected it since E3, when Microsoft had their press conference and they didn't put Microsoft console exclusive up when they announced the Cuphead DLC.
It was a timed exclusive.
It was, but when they announced it at E3, they always do console exclusive or, like, limited exclusive or something like that, and for that one they didn't put anything. So I figured that we were getting Cuphead on Switch at some point, just because it's already on. You can already get it on, you know, the Microsoft PC channels. So I expected it, but seeing it like this and the way they announced it was great. That trailer was really offbeat, very funny, just super Cupheady.
I was like, what the heck am I watching? Yes,
that was the highlight for me. Obviously, that was the number one highlight, and I've beaten that game. They've said since that there's going to be bonus content, not like big time bonus content, but there's going to be some Easter eggs put in just for the Switch version. So they're going all out for this.
Yeah, and then there's rumors about Mughead being in his own single player campaign, so there's
right,
that.
Right,
fact that we got Cuphead. I mean, Cuphead was such an inspirational story because these guys put everything they had, including like their own houses, on the line to make this
very
old school, super special, super unique title, and then everyone loved it. And so
now, before you go any further, I mean, I wanted to add in what Ty was talking about. You know, they did show off, well, not in the indie, but if you go to Cuphead's website, they're showing you what's going to be in the new DLC.
Ah.
Oh.
And Miss Chalice is going to be a playable character.
Right.
There's going to be a new location to play in. There are going to be new weapons. It's a bunch of new stuff. Yeah, if you go to cuphead.com/dlc.html, you can see all the stuff that's coming out. And there's a couple other things, like mentioned, that are coming out exclusively for the Switch version.
Oh.
And then, of course, not long after the reveal, the team, or was at GDC when this was actually revealed, and one of the creators said that he wants Cuphead and Mugman in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. He goes, I've dreamed of Smash Bros. Cuphead and Mega Man belong in... Sorry, I said Mega Man. Mugman. Mega Man's already in there. Five different times, technically. So basically, if fans want it, I couldn't see how Nintendo wouldn't want the fans to get what they wanted. Don't get me started. I think they would because they support their fans a lot. Don't get me started. So if Nintendo was keeping their fans happy, don't get me started, then I'd be more than pleased to make that the easiest transition. Just a piece of paper. We don't need anything. You can have those characters make an appearance.
Well, with the recent partnership with Nintendo and Microsoft, it certainly seems like a good possibility, to say the least. I mean, we talked about different characters from under the Microsoft banners, but again, it seems very likely, it seems possible now.
I agree that it's possible. I just don't know what would they be doing as characters, because their obvious one is their little what do we call it, the pop
finger
gun.
Shots.
Yeah, the finger shots. Yeah. Like that's literally their thing. So, what else is there for them to do?
Well, I think that Sakurai could get creative with it. I mean, we've seen Pac-Man use other items in his kit, his taunts. He always uses. He brings out the Galaga stuff. He has the Galaga grab. So I could see Cuphead using items from the bosses in the games.
Okay,
for sure. And obviously the blaster, they have different guns that could all do different serve different purposes. You got the close range shooter that could be a smash attack. And obviously it would function a lot like Mega Man, actually, which I hate Mega Man, but I would love Cuphead. So I'm totally okay with it. They could come up with a moveset for sure. That being said, let's get Banjo-Kazooie in first from Microsoft and then Cup and Mug.
So, but hey, it's nice to have dreams, but as Eggman once said, dreams are meant to be broken. Anyway, but yeah, seriously, big deal for, you know, for Cuphead and for Nintendo fans who haven't gotten to play Cuphead. So that's pretty cool. All right, so continuing on, let's talk about specific titles that we are personally looking forward to. I mean, we could talk about the whole thing, but that would take too much time. So let's talk about the ones we're looking forward to the most. I'll tell you what I was surprised about. They actually did this in the European Indie Showcase, Neo Cab.
Okay.
Yeah, I like this. For those who don't remember, this is where you are apparently the last human worker in a whole city, and you're a rideshare person, because why the heck not, and you're trying to find your friend while taking cab rides all over the city to, you know, transport people, and how you interact with them and whether you pick them up or not is going to influence the story. And I don't know why, it's just there's something about the look and the feel, like the way the story can branch out in a thousand different ways, and the fact that you're being watched by the super evil corporation, Walmart, or whatever the heck it's called. And,
Walmart Core.
Yeah, Walmart Core. There you go. So it feels special, and that it really intrigued me. It honestly did.
That's interesting. That wasn't one that jumped out at me. It did look cool, the visual style. I liked a lot. There were a lot of games that I liked in this. I have written every one that was announced down, and I put in bold the one I want. And I think there are 8 in bold that I am interested in. I think Red Lantern had one of the best trailers I've ever seen.
That was a very striking.
She sounded like Alison Brie in BoJack Horseman, but I know she wasn't.
I think that's Ashley Birch. It's from if you remember from Life is Strange 2. Is it not, Keith? I think that's Ashley Birch.
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, you're probably right, Will. You know those things. She nailed that intro. It's a game that looks like it's a roguelike sort of deal.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's a confirmed roguelike.
Okay.
Where you're trying to you're mushing your iteron, whatever that's called.
Yeah, iteron.
And you're trying to get home. And there's all sorts of obstacles that come out at you, but it seems like you're not always with your dogs. Sometimes you're hunting in the woods and trying to survive. But there's a lot of things to balance, it seems, and the story seemed great. They really sold me on that trailer. I highly recommend looking up the Red Lantern trailer. It seems like a really cool passion project.
Yeah. Granted, I'm more of a Green Lantern kind of guy.
Jeez, of course you would make that reference here.
Of course I would. I'm a comic book guy. Anyway, but yeah, I totally agree. That was definitely one of the ones that stood out for me. The narration at the beginning was very emotional. Very personal. And then there's the bear attack. And it's just like,
oh my god, when I saw that, Twitch chat, when they were saying like, oh no, what, no, not the doggy, don't hurt the doggy. I mean, it's bad enough I gotta go take care of my pet wolf in Metal Gear Solid 5. I do not need to lose a dog in this game now. It's like, don't hurt my doggies.
I was so upset by that because, especially I've been playing Wargroove and the dogs just run away in that one. And this game, we see the dog just get bought by a bear. You hear its neck gets it's just very upsetting.
That's rules of nature for you, unfortunately. It stinks, but again, rules of nature.
What about you, Will? What was the one that stood out to you?
For me, as I said before, like the one thing that I think we're gonna be talking about more is definitely Candace of Hyrule, because when they showed showed it up, and especially with a Nintendo IP, an indie game, is like, holy moly, they're actually doing this. Indie Zelda like type of games, like that beat, it's just wow. Definitely took me by surprise, to say the least. Other games is definitely, as I said, I actually tried out Swim Sanity back in Play MRC, and it's a great shooter underwater. Plus, it's just like there is the co-op as well as a versus mode. A very interesting shooter, to say at least. So, like, if you want to love your basically a whole lot of C puns, there is a lot of C puns in this thing. So, if you like shooters, underground shooters, then yeah, Swim Sanity is definitely another game to look forward to. I like to see. But also, I'm also kind of interested in seeing My Friend Pedro, which is the self-aware talking banana. But like, I grew up watching a lot of John Woo films. And, like, if you know John Woo films, then you know how much like the gun stock, like the bullet ballet of sorts films is like. It really sticks my fancy as a John Woo fan. So like, yeah, My Friend Pedro is just, it really scratches that itch. So I'm looking forward to that game.
All right, and... hold on, stop. You've already revealed like 3 games already.
All right.
I said one game, Will. You had one job. All right, Keith, how about you?
So this one was a toughie, actually, because some of these games I've already been looking forward to on the PC, or I've already played them. Cuphead, obviously, you played that. I will say, I'm going to do what Will did. I'm going to say 2 games, not 1. I'm going to disregard your rule because there are 2 games that I really want to talk about. The first one is Overland.
Oh, yeah.
That looks cool.
I've been playing that on the PC. It's an early access. And that is a very fun game. It is very enjoyable, but it is tough. And I love the what's the word I'm looking for? Unexpectedness. I don't think that's a word. Of stuff that happens. And you're like, wow, what the hell? Why did that just happen? What's going on? And you're frankly trying to manage everything while none of it is in your control. I love those kind of games. Also,
I had a question about that, Keith, before you go to the next one.
Go ahead.
Because watching that game, it did look really cool to me. How does that split-second decision-making work? For the people who didn't see it, basically the way they kind of advertised it was you're always between a rock and a hard place. You can choose to save your friends, or you can choose to save your dog, or you can choose to save yourself. How does that actually work when you're playing the game? Do you ever feel like you can accomplish everything?
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. No. I like that a lot.
That game is a lot of risk reward. You're not, like I said, you're not in control of everything. You're not. It reminds me a lot of Oregon Trail.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay,
that now you say it, I could see that
the
would
original
be
roguelike.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I will have to say the surprise for me, the one I'm looking forward to the most is Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of
Crypto the Necrodancer. And then when I saw that, I was like, wait, that doesn't look like, what is this? And then I heard the music, I was like, oh, really? They put Legend of Zelda characters and universe in there? That's really cool. So, yes, I want to play that.
So, actually, I found IGN made a, actually talked with the team of, and here's the thing. This is a very odd move for Nintendo because they're giving their one of their biggest licenses to an indie dev. But this actually happened quite naturally because, according to the team behind Crypt of the Necrodancer, they went to Nintendo and they wanted to go do a Nintendo Switch project. And they talked about how it would be cool if they made DLC for Crypt of the Necrodancer. And Nintendo was like, why don't you just make a whole game about it? Like, where is that freedom, Nintendo, every other time? It's just like, what was it about this team that you said, yeah, just go ahead and take it? We don't care.
I mean, is that a published product?
They must have enjoyed the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, because like I actually just read an article on Soconera. They actually, because they discussed it, that actually someone on the Japanese team actually was interested in their game. So it's basically a two-way interest. So they want to make a game. They saw Crypto the Necrodancer and they want to do something with it, with their own IP. So yeah, it's kind of two-way street.
Duly noted. But yeah,
there was a few other things. I think that all the Devolver Digital games looked pretty good. Katana Zero looked fun. I thought one out. That looked pretty interesting. Almost Celeste-like in turn. Like when you die, you immediately get respawned back at the beginning of the room. That was pretty cool. And I think Rad was a surprise to me because when those two guys came and talked about it, I was like, this is going to be such a weird game. And it was, but in all the right ways. Like, this game is colorful. Wherever you walk, like, grass grows behind you. And it seems like, from what I got of it, you're trying to kind of resurrect the world. I think they said the world has been burned to ashes twice. And your job is to try to bring it back. And
here we go. It says, as a teenage protagonist, players must journey into the Follow, an ever-changing, procedurally generated wasteland that holds the secret to the past and the answer to the future. Here, radioactive toxins will randomly mutate your character, giving you powerful new abilities that challenge you to constantly adapt your playstyle. So, yeah.
Yeah, we saw a ton of really interesting adaptations as well. I think the one time he had a really like long slimy arm, and at the end he was a skeleton with a sword. There was a lot of interesting things in that game. I thought it looked fantastic.
Right, including one power up, you actually can lay eggs and make your own little spawnlings.
Yeah.
Say the least. So yeah, I just gotta appreciate Tim Schafer's pun as well. Like, this game's gonna be rad, and the title's literally rad. It's like, wow, way to go, Tim Schafer.
Don't spoil it, Tim. Oh gosh, but yeah, there was a lot of surprises here. I mean, Cuphead, Rad, Cadence of Hyrule. They really killed it with this indie showcase for sure.
Blaster Master 02 the day of.
I want to pick that up. I just have too many games to play right now. I really want to play that.
I thought it's you were a fan of the first one.
I am. I've been a fan of Blaster Master since the original NES.
So yeah, that's another big one. So many games, and again, just Nintendo showing how much they love their indies.
What did you guys think of Creature in the Well? That was the pinball looking game.
Oh yeah,
with a really unique art style, which I think is so important for an indie
game.
Game
mechanic.
I didn't get it watching it. Like, I didn't see what the pinball thing was. Did anybody else kind of?
Well, it's you, that's actually what, if you notice the swiping, that doesn't hurt enemies, but the pinballs, those hurt enemies.
Okay.
So you're trying to bounce them off to activate things to hit enemies. And more. At least
that's
how I
interpreted it. There were so many pinballs flying around that it was hard to track. But that game looked like it had potential.
Yeah.
It just seems weird to add that kind of gameplay mechanic into a dungeon crawling game. That's going to be interesting when it comes out.
Yeah.
It's
summer
a new
2019.
Idea.
All right. Well, of course, let us know what you thought of the Nindie Showcase comments on the Outer Haven page. All right, Tyler.
Yes.
There was apparently some Sonic Team Racing news
you know,
or something.
I can't blame you for looking at me on this one, but this is Will's, actually. He put it
okay,
right in the
fine,
chat.
Okay, fine, Will.
We...
Will, please let the obvious what happened.
Okay, this is actually written by our Koopa Keefe here. Basically, it showed off more details regarding to the music behind Team Sonic Racing, basically behind the scenes with Jun Senua and Toriyana. Basically, the people who did Crush 40, who prior Sonic games, you know, Sonic Adventure Battle 2, like Live and Learn, those great songs. And so we basically get to see like behind the scenes of what they're going to do with the next song with Team Sonic Racing. And but what I basically heard, like, yeah, I still remember, like, you Tyler, you actually said that you recommended me to actually try Team Sonic Racing because like, it has this great classic songs of,
yeah,
like, Sonic's lore, Sonic of Yore and all that. And, again, if they had Crush 40 in this thing, I mean, okay, I'm definitely peaked because Crush 40, they've done so much great songs. I love Live and Learn is, like... And yeah, just hearing these things, like, okay,
Live and Learn. It doesn't matter. The original, it doesn't matter from Sonic Adventure. Open Your Heart. Oh my gosh, all the bangers, all the bangers.
Yeah.
I think City Escape was also Crush 40, but I'm not.
Oh, of course, that's classic. That's a classic.
Yeah.
Sure. So yeah, overall, yeah, there is currently a behind the scenes of this is on Sonic Racing channel, and yeah, if you love Crush 40, man, this is only gonna hit you right in the feels of nostalgia. So definitely get a chance to look at it and look at our articles from our boss. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the reason why I did that is because the music. I've always loved the music in every Sonic game, and Toriyana is an amazing chiptune artist, and I don't think enough people know about her. And that's why I put some of the music on the article. She is amazing, and she's been in the chiptune scene for years. And she's doing some amazing work in this soundtrack.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to check out the article yet, but I am looking forward to it when we're finished recording. They've been posting songs
almost every week.
And they're really good, right, Keith? Like, that's
yeah,
not just
they're,
me. They're
good.
They're
really good. They've been really good with getting people hyped up for Team Sonic Racing. They've been putting out footage of the racetracks. They've been putting out snippets of the music. I mean, they really want the game to succeed. They're really trying to get the racing fans and the Sonic fans behind them. And they're doing a good job so far. At least I think they are.
Yeah, no, right? I'm with you. I'm all in on this game. I wish that they had a little bit more diversity in the roster, but they're doing a great job of advertising it.
And hey, if the roster isn't big enough this time, the next time they'll live and learn and make a bigger one.
You were sitting on that pun. You were waiting to unleash that.
I mean, I did have another pun in mind, but it doesn't matter. All right, sticking to music, Fire Emblem. Three Houses has... Or what was this? I never exactly understood what was going on. What is this Fire Emblem music thing, Tyler?
It was actually the battle music. Yeah, the main battle theme.
The Fogland battle theme has been released by Nintendo. So it's similar. They're following in Sega's footsteps. On Twitter, they have been regularly releasing music from Fire Emblem Three Houses. And this track was pretty good again. I wouldn't say... It was a groundbreaking one. I like the main theme. The more I listen to that, the more I'm like, wow, this is great. Like I love it. This seemed more traditional Fire Emblem, which is also, I mean, that's fantastic in its own right. But yeah, you can check out the Foldland battle map theme on Nintendo's Twitter, and I think on their YouTube too.
All right, and in a special twist, we got our first Fire Emblem Three Houses commercial. Even though it's not coming out for months. So it was a Japanese commercial, and it basically showed a Japanese woman playing the game as she was en route to her home. And we got to see another look at the battles, which again will be more of a army setting than before. And our first look at the overview map, which does appear to be in more traditional Fire Emblem style.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Mm-hmm.
So again, small snippets as we wait patiently for the July 26th release date that shouldn't have taken that long.
No, it Todd, it's gonna be worth every second of it. One of the biggest things was, oh, sorry, well, go ahead.
No, as a, yeah, I'm pretty much the same compliments. It's like, yeah, it will come, and we're already almost through with March, so we're gonna head into April soon, man. Hang on
That's right.
there.
We are getting there, but I want to point out that because we had talked in our Discord chat, you said I was begging for screen caps of everything, and I got them. And guess what? There is a lot of cool information in some of these little tiny glimpses that you can see, including the fact that squads that they showed off back at E3 when they showed the formations they're definitely still in the game. We didn't see those last time, so people weren't sure if they were taking them out. And they actually started kind of diving into attention to detail on the individual soldiers. Byleth kind of issues the command to send his troops charging at the enemy, and they all look different. Instead of just generic black soldiers, they have different armor, different helms. It makes it so much more lively. And that was something I was a little nervous about back at E3, so I'm excited to see that this extra development time has gone towards that attention to detail.
Duly noted. So, but yeah, hopefully we'll get more and more reveals as we edge ever closer, day by day, until the July 26th release date of Fire Emblem Three Houses. And by this time next week, we'll be getting ready for the launch of Yoshi's Crafted World, which is a true start to the Nintendo content year. We'll see how that goes. Alright, next up, Mortal Kombat! Actually, there's a lot of reveals, both shown and coming. We got a new character reveal slash confirmation trailer in Kotal Kahn and Jackie Briggs, who, okay, it was Kotal Kahn's trailer, but Jackie Briggs won. So how does that work? All right.
His butt. It was hilarious.
I guess you could say that Jackie was more than half the man he was.
Apparently people don't like Jackie Briggs. I don't know why. I think she was pretty cool in the last game.
Yeah, apparently a lot of people disagree with that statement.
Because we want Jax back.
Jax is awesome. He is awesome. But she was pretty cool. I think that they kind of did this as a joke and to kind of build that her character up. I do feel bad if you like Kotal Kahn, which I didn't. I much prefer Jackie Briggs. I was glad to watch Kotal get bodied. You might want to see an actual, you know, Kotal reveal trailer, but they showed off some of what he had in store, particularly savage moves. He has this one where he whacked her in the side, like right above her hip, and he just kind of like sawed into her with this giant blade. It was brutal. It was very Mortal Kombat-esque.
Right, yeah, and like, if there's also one move actually just slices stomach, and she actually, Kotal Kahn actually drinks the blood that comes from her stomach. Like, holy.
And then he transforms into an animal and mauls her, and yeah, it's pretty brutal. And Kotal Kahn is voiced by Phil Lamar, legendary voice actor.
Yeah.
Who I have met, so incredibly nice man. So that's pretty cool. But then tomorrow at C2E2, an event I will be at, but sadly,
oh, you're going to that one? Nice.
But I can't go to the panel because of a conflict. But at the con, they will reveal another new character and confirm the first DLC character, which
already?
Is making everybody, everybody thinks it's going to be Spawn.
No way.
Here's the thing. Another great Todd McFarlane, said that Spawn was going to be in Mortal Kombat 11. And we're at a Comic-Con, and Spawn is a comic character, so wouldn't it be something if they just happened to bring Todd McFarlane with them or have him on a video or something, bringing Spawn into the show? Because there is no reason why they should have a DLC character reveal when the roster's not filled yet. So that's
right.
Why everyone's thinking it's Spawn, because it's poetic. It's a comic book reveal like a month before the game comes out.
Looks like they'll have to cover that then. Yeah, I'm looking. I saw it, but I wasn't paying attention to it. So 12:45 to 1:45. He's going to show off the making of Mortal Kombat 11. The new fighter for the gameplay trailer. So two characters, a new fighter,
like I said,
and a new DLC.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And information about the story mode. Okay.
Right.
Oh.
I'm hoping Kitana's the normal character. She's been seen so many times. I just want to make sure that I can play as her. I know that I can, but I love her, and I need.
So at present, the only characters that have been shown in the trailers but not confirmed as playable is Liu Kang, Kung Lao, Kitana, and Aaron Black. Because now we have
No, Aaron Black is confirmed.
He was confirmed. Yeah,
okay.
He must
have missed that one. Okay, so yeah, so now it's just Liu Kang, Kung Lao, Kitana, and I feel like there might have been one more, but we'll see.
There is one more.
Certainly not Reptile.
No.
There's been no Reptile sighting, and everybody is sad about that.
You got Baraka. Be happy.
I know. Baraka's way better than Reptile.
All right. Anyway, while Keith's looking that up.
Oh, Corona, how you pronounce her name?
Kronika?
She's not playable. They said she's not going to be playable whatsoever.
Yeah, she's
Kung Lao,
not playable.
Kung Lao, Liu Kang, and
Kitana.
All right. Now, this next story I know will make Will very happy and sad at the same time. So, as we all know, the Detective Pikachu movie is coming. And apparently, early projections have it doing a very large estimate at the domestic box office, but we'll see how that goes. But of course, a lot of people were sad upon first hearing about this film because Danny DeVito was not cast as Detective Pikachu. And everyone was mad because the fans were begging for Danny DeVito to be cast as Detective Pikachu. Well, he almost was. Because according to the producer and visual effects producer of the movie, they actually did bring in Danny DeVito to voice Detective Pikachu to see what it was like, because they heard the fans' response to it.
Mm-hmm.
They go, we definitely thought about it and how it might inform the spirit of it. Danny is incredible, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Danny DeVito. It was really funny, so I couldn't speak to all the reasons why it wasn't Danny DeVito. At some point, maybe after the movie comes out, we could share early tests. It's absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're wondering, okay, well, what feels so hilarious? Why didn't it work? They did say, in terms of where the story goes and how it evolves, we had to sort of look at everything, including what fans weren't seeing yet, to make the decision. But the spirit of Danny DeVito, I promise you, is still inside Pikachu.
What exactly does that mean? I don't understand that part.
I think it's like his type of comedy. His nature is still in Pikachu, but voiced through Ryan Reynolds. I think that's what they mean.
We know you wanted him. He's not here. We're sorry about that.
Maybe.
I think that's what that means.
Maybe.
Because I'm basically thinking of like Danny DeVito voicing the Ryan Reynolds line, like, I can quit coffee, no problem, and like, I can't do it because everyone can't beat the hell out of here.
Like, I'm just thinking of him as him voicing like the Lorax.
Oh, yeah. I'm Lorax. Never saw that movie.
Oh, we found a good movie. I mean, Danny DeVito has done a multitude of different comedy sketches from about every one of his movies. Every one of his movies, he's always run a full gamut of being hilarious to being cynical to being dry humor. So I don't understand that one, but.
I'm glad they actually did try to attempt it. I mean, hopefully, perhaps in the DVD Blu-ray extras, we'll probably see that out footage. But at least they tried with Danny DeVito. And again, I'm still kind of sad, like in that one moment, like what the heck is up Pikachu when someone asked him at a con, which is like kind of crushing away. But at least they tried. At least the producers.
At least they tried. At least they considered it. And they listened to fans, and then they said, we think Ryan Reynolds will be better, which, okay. I'm still not going to see the movie. Nope.
You are the worst.
Wait, you're not going to see the movie?
No.
What?
No. I will rent it when it comes out.
It's going to be great. It's going to get great reviews, and you're going to love it.
Out of honor for Pokemon, I will rent it when it comes out. I will not see it in theater.
Why would you, judge a book before its cover?
Well, the A-Pom was part of it, that's for sure.
That I tried.
No, I don't like the look of a lot of the Pokemon. I don't like certain aspects of the comedy that I saw, and I never even played the game, so it's not like I have a bias or connection to it. It's just this is not what I would want the first live action Pokemon movie to be.
I am so disappointed. Keith, what is your official stance on Detective Pikachu? Are you excited for it or not
don't
excited?
Get me
for
involved
it?
In that one. No.
No, I need to know. Official statement.
I would say asking me is probably the worst thing to do because you're talking to someone who's yet to play a Pokemon game. Remember that. No.
that's true. I guess you haven't played a Pokemon game.
It's not like I hate the movie, Tyler. It's just I have certain expectations, and I want those expectations to be fulfilled. You know, just like they were for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Okay, let's move on. Let's get any weirder. All right, here's one that our friend Josh pulled out. Apparently, the Nintendo Switch beat the Xbox and PS4 in sales for February 2019, which is important to note because, technically speaking, they didn't actually have a good release in February. So, yeah. Go Switch. Yeah! Go Switch! And if you remember, they also won January, which honestly wasn't a surprise given Mario and Smash Brothers. So, yeah. And it switches off to a pretty good start. So, I'm sure that once Yoshi comes out, that'll move some consoles as well. Actually, I'm not sure that they're going to win this one. And then again, I would have said that about February, too, because didn't Anthem come out in February? Or was that March?
No, do not talk about that game.
Okay, well, Anthem was the best-selling game of February.
It was, because the game sold on hype, the game sold on people digitally pre-ordering the game, and not being able to get the money back.
Yeah. Oh, so like Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yes, but worse.
But worse, yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about upcoming, I mean, to be honest, the Switch is going to sell a lot, and this is just how the nature of the beast is. The Switch is a great system. The Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, I mean, outside of a couple of games, they're not really attracting people like they were. Last year was a great year for PlayStation, this year not so much, and they're just expensive. I mean, if I'm buying a system, and I'm looking at the games, I'm looking at what's coming out, and I'm looking at, well, this one is $400, and this is, you know, $300. This one's pretty cool. I can take with me and do a couple of things with it. This one doesn't have anything I want to play right now. It all depends on what's available. I mean, we might see that change in March, because Devil May Cry, because of Sirico. What else? What else we got? We got a couple other big games coming out. But those games, I fully imagine that Sekiro, I'm going to say it proper, it's going to push a lot of... See, and I hate to say this, but it's going to push a lot of PlayStations, even though it plays like crap on the PlayStation. No offense to anybody owning the PlayStation, because I own one as well. I own two.
It feels like it's a PlayStation exclusive. Like, I know it's not, but in my... Like, when I first heard the name of the game, I instantly thought... PlayStation. So I don't know how PlayStation has sort of dominated. If PlayStation has even dominated the marketing for that game, did they show that at E3 last year?
Yes, it was shown at E3.
That's why.
But Sony didn't show it though. It was shown. It was first shown on Microsoft's conference.
Okay. What was the game that Sony showed that was a similar kind of samurai game?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Ghost of Tsushima. Yeah. That's right. Okay, that's why.
That's coming out this year.
Yeah, well, we haven't heard a lot about that game, and a lot of people are worried about that game.
Yeah, it's from Sucker Punch. I trust them. So, all right, last bit of news, and was now becoming a yearly tradition. Nintendo has revealed the top-selling titles for the Switch, now updated for the last year of titles. And so, in no particular order, the top-selling games are Stardew Valley, not surprising, Hollow Knight, which is been noted to have done very well on Switch. Overcooked 2, not a surprise. Undertale, not a surprise. Dead Cells, kind of a surprise.
Oh.
Enter the Gungeon. Graceful Explosion Machine. Some title called Celeste, not sure.
I hate you so much.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yes, it is. Golf Story, that is surprising. And the original Overcooked.
Okay.
So, and again, that does not in order. It's just the 10 best-selling indie titles on Switch right now. So, and
I do
these
feel
are...
like it's safe to say that Stardew Valley is going to be the number one.
Probably.
The others could really fall anywhere on that spectrum. I'm surprised Undertale already is that high. When that released for Switch, I mean, I bought it, but I didn't know, I didn't feel like the big push online for, whoa, Undertale's finally on Switch.
You got to remember, Undertale has a huge following.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah.
And that's pushing sales.
I mean, here, if you want to know how big it was, and I'm going a little bit off book here, at Wrestle Kingdom in January, the one and only Kenny Omega walked out to the ring in Undertale music while having an NES-style RPG of his journey playing the whole time, while dressed as a one-winged angel. So yeah, there's a lot of
the culture, hasn't he?
Oh, he's always loved Japan, and I'm gonna meet him tomorrow. So twice actually. Anyway, but that's another topic for another time. So yeah, there you go. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to talk about the big news of the week. Google has officially unveiled their what do we want to call it? Attempt to join the console market with the Stadia, and we're gonna talk about it. We're going to talk about how it relates to the Switch. Will it affect the Switch's sales? Will it affect the other console's sales? How will it affect this console generation and the one that's upcoming with the Scarlet and the PS5? We're going to break this down in a Nintendo discussion. All right, Keith, so you are by far the one most versed in this, which is why we wanted you to be on the podcast tonight. So please break down everything that we know about the Google Stadia right
well,
now.
Well, how about this? We'll do it this way. You ask me the question, and I will give you the answer, because I'm better giving out information that way.
All right. What is the Google Stadia?
Google Stadia is Google's attempt to get into the gaming scene. I was going to say console, but this is actually going out for everybody. It's basically their initiative to get everybody involved in gaming, not just the living room, anybody. People on PCs, people on laptops, people on tablets, people on smartphones. The Stadia is basically your game streamed to you from Google on every device that you own.
All right, what are the specs and technical aspects that we know about it right now?
Right now, the Stadia is being powered by a custom AMD chipset. They're saying it's about 10 teraflops of power, which means it's more powerful than Xbox One X and the PlayStation 4 Pro. Now, you got to keep in mind, the Stadia has nodes, or they haven't really broken down, we'll just say nodes, that have this chipset in them, and they're going to be racked into all of Google's data centers. So it's going to be more than just, you know, one console sitting there. And there goes my thing talking.
Apparently you pick up on Hey Google. Yeah.
Say, hey Google, I think, oh.
Hey Google, tell us about the Stadia. The Stadia is the best console/ gaming platform ever made.
I'm getting a flashback when they said, like, when you ask Google which is the best phone. Yeah, or what was that, the iPhone thing? Yeah, that was the iPhone thing. Yeah.
I don't remember.
I think it's important to note that the Stadia is not a console. It's a doobob that you plug into your TV.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the big thing that Phil Harrison has been stressing, that it is not a console. It is something that is accessible via every device, and for TV, you will need a specific Google Chromecast called the Chromecast Ultra.
Okay.
So you can plug
the Stadia into your laptop and play from your computer.
You won't need it in your laptop. It'll be installed by software.
Okay.
Yeah, you really don't need any hardware for this. The only reason the TV needs it is because for the TV, and this is something they didn't tell people during the conference or keynote or whatever you want to call it, the TV version or the Chromecast version can only use the Stadia controller. It cannot use every Bluetooth controller. They said that, but that's not the case. That only works for laptops and smartphones and PCs. TV can only use the Stadia controller.
Hmm.
Okay, so which looks pretty good, I thought. The Stadia controller reminded me a lot of the Switch Pro controller.
So they're saying they worked on this controller for about the past 2 years. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
But this looks like an Xbox One Switch or Pro controller.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, the butt layout, everything looks similar to these. Like, I don't see anything that looks even remotely different. I will say I'm not a fan of the controller, only because I think the aesthetics are really nice. I don't like the microphone. Why did you put a microphone in your damn controller?
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Okay.
No, I don't need that. I don't need that. No. Bad enough I got Google Home behind me. Like, Oh, did you say you wanted some pizza? No, I did not. Stop.
right.
Google, can you please turn off the Stadia? I'm sorry, Todd. I'm afraid
I can't let
you do that.
Remember when people were Kinect was out and people were doing that and the Kinect would turn off the Xboxes?
Yeah.
Kinect, turn off the Xbox. And it would do it. Like, no, don't do that.
Yeah, that's definitely gonna bring some problems. Like, it's gonna be like voice command. Like, I mean, granted, I always appreciate saying Google to my phone and all that, but I don't need this thing for my system.
Getting back to the specs, so they're saying that this service can run 1080p 60 frames per second on pretty much every device. However, there are bandwidth requirements. You need to have at least 25 megs down,
which apparently is a no go in Australia.
Well,
that was a joke.
Well, I was talking to one of our Australian buddy about that, and he kept telling me that they can't get it. But they are bringing it to Australia. They are working on it. They're working on a lot of compression techniques and cheats to get that down.
Right.
It also will run at 4K at 60 frames per second with HDR support, which is very impressive. They're saying that's going to require about 30 megs per second. I call shenanigans on that just because I know how much of an overhead 4K and 60 frames per second is, and you're adding a high definition resolution to it. Yeah, no. Or high dynamic, excuse me. That's not going to work. You're going to need more than that. But the problem that I have, regardless, is we'll just focus on North America. We have so many different broadband structures in this country. We've got ISPs with data caps. We've got people that are still running DSL. We've got really decrepit infrastructures at that. We've got monopolies. We've got Comcast telling Google they can't come into an area, telling Fios they can't come into an area. So the broadband in this country is in a bad state. And for Google to come and say, hey, we're going to do this, you need at least a 25 meg download or a pipe. Like, you do realize you're in North America and we have a problem with that, right?
So see, this is why I'm glad we have you here to explain these things, because I didn't even consider those infrastructure problems. I mean, I've always kind of had pretty decent internet. I think I have Google Fiber, so it wouldn't really impact me. But that is a real a fascinating drawback. I'm surprised I didn't hear more about that.
But when you think about that, if you think about how our infrastructure is in North America, that immediately halves anybody's, I don't want to say interest, but ability to partake in that.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I know everybody's pushing streaming, and I get it. Streaming is a big part, and it will be a big portion of the future. But if the delivery mechanism is not there, there's a problem. There's a reason why people like boxes and why people don't want to do straight digital or don't want to have always connected, because if they don't have a good connection, it's going to be a bad experience. If they lose internet connectivity, it's going to be a bad experience. Google Stadia is going to be garbage if you're in the middle of playing a game and it drops. You're like, well, yeah, you can't play the game now. Sorry.
Yeah, how does it work with saving? Like, it would if you're streaming the game, and like, I guess, does it just save like any other normal?
They haven't stated. All they stated is everything is in the cloud.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably something they've had ironed out. Just I'm not a tech guy, obviously.
I would hope they would, but
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of stuff we don't know about yet.
All right, so let's talk about what we do know. We know that they are going to get some high-quality AAA titles, including Doom Eternal, which has been confirmed for the service, and there is a Google in-house studio being ran by Jade Raymond?
That is correct. That studio is going to work on Stadia-exclusive titles. Obviously, we don't know what they are. They did say that over 100 different developers have access to a Stadia development kit, but we don't have the names of those companies. Obviously, we do know that Doom Eternal is coming out. We also know that likely it'll be a Ubisoft game, because during the Google Project, Product Stream beta that I got a chance to check out, the game that we were testing was Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So it's safe to say that that's going to be one of the games as well. It would have been nice to know a little more about who was going to be there. There were reports that Crystal Dynamics was also there, so we might see something from them. Maybe that Avengers game that they've been working on for the past year or so might be a game. But I don't like when you come to the conference and you're like, we've got all these people working on our games. Okay, great. What games? Yeah. The games.
That's one thing Nintendo did it unbelievably when they unveiled the Switch, when they said, you know, here you had that big picture of like the 50 or whatever games that were coming, and not just studios, you know, we knew several big titles, and we also did have like the general Bethesda's making it, Bethesda's on board, blah 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 blah. That helped a lot to kind of get people to buy into the console. So I am surprised that Google didn't follow in that.
And there's a lot of I'll put it this way: when Microsoft did that, they were bad. Don't do that. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. That's a failure. Why are you doing that? Google's doing it. Oh my God, it's the best thing in the world. Yeah. We don't know anything. How? I mean, I was excited for the technology and what they told us, but as I sat there and I processed it, I'm like, this isn't all that you guys are making it out to be. And then you're telling us you got to wait till summer to find out more information. If you're going to roll out something, you're going to tell us about something, and you want us to get really excited, don't make us wait for another event. Tell us now, then show us what it's going to be at the upcoming event. Because right. What they did, and I don't think they did this on purpose, but what they really did was pissing Microsoft cereal, and Microsoft was like, oh, really? The second they showed their Stadia, Phil Spencer came out and was like, huh, that's nice. You didn't really show us anything new. By the way, we'll be coming for you at E3.
Cool.
Good luck. Cool. I was like, what? Why did you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that email from him, and he said some nice things. But he's like, yeah, they didn't really surprise us or anything, and, you know, our job is to deliver at E3, which you know we will, and yeah.
Well, I have a very important question that you explained in the chat, Keith, but I didn't totally get. One of the big problems with streamed gaming services are that there would be input delay because it just oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the word, but whatever, the infrastructure would kind of mandate. It's not like you're sitting there playing the Switch and you press the button and it immediately happens because it has to stream everything. So there's a little bit of lag. How is the Stadia going to avoid that?
Well, as they mentioned, they have some compression techniques and they're using some tricks. But their biggest thing they're saying is because they're using their broadband infrastructure, they're not going to be using public infrastructure to get their data to you. So they're able to provide you in layman terms, the way we talk about it, and in my field, is a pipe.
Okay.
So they're able to give you a fatter pipe that's going to give the data transfer a little more of a boost.
Okay, so now, we might actually still see that be a minor
going to
issue.
See it. You're never going to get rid of input latency. And a quick lesson: you're never going to get rid of input latency when you stream. You will never get rid of it 100%. It's just not possible. However, it could be very negligible because, like, if you play a DualShock 4 controller or a Switch controller, anything that's wireless, you still have input delay.
Right.
But as you play a game, you get trained to ignore it, or certain games, they're built around masking that, so you really don't see it. That's why
right.
You see a lot of people playing fighting games, they use wire controllers to get rid of any sort of input delay. And there is still input delay in wire controllers. I don't know why I tell people there isn't, because there is.
Right.
Anytime you have to push a button, it still takes the software a split second or a fraction of a millisecond to say, oh, you pressed the button, I'm going to do this.
Well, that's funny. I mean, it's a big thing with Smash Ultimate when it came out, especially using the GameCube adapter. There's like 7 frames of input delay, which
exactly.
is 7/60th of a second. But when I first started playing the game, I felt that. And I think Smash 4 had like 4 frames of input delay or 5, somewhere around there. Hardly more time. But you do feel those slight
exactly.
fractions of a second.
And that's like what I said. Certain games do a good job of masking that, doing a good job of not, you're not seeing it. But really high, well, games that really demand that split second, like Smash Ultimate, Street Fighter V had a big issue when it first came out. Street Fighter IV had a big issue when it came out. Input delay in fighting games, they measure it in frames, is a big deal, because if you're playing a game and a move is like, you do something and it's 7 frames, and if somebody does a move that's 4 frames, that 4-frame move is going to beat your 7-frame move anytime. That's a big deal. So this input delay is going to cause a lot of issues for people that want to play Twitch-based games. When I say Twitch-based, I mean fast-moving games, shoot like first-person shooters, or racing games, or fighting games.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting how Google gets around that. It's going to be interesting how anybody gets around that.
All right, so let's ask the big question. How big of an impact will the Stadia actually have on the gaming industry?
If you have the broadband, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal for casual gamers. However, there are a lot of ifs. If you have the games, if the pricing is right, if you can compete with the Xbox, the PlayStation, and the Switch. If you don't have the games, your service is useless.
Right.
If there's a technical performance issue, your service is useless.
I agree. It's just there's a lot of factors to consider right now. And
there's a lot of factors.
And just also because the way they were teasing it as well, they also bring the like the Sega, the old previous like the Dreamcast, Atari, like all these old consoles that were tried and failed, and now Google's kind of trying to like step up and try to like make a name for themselves.
Well, I think the consoles, it was an evolution of the console, and it was also consoles that tried to do something new. And right. It's not so much that they tried and failed, because it. Every time somebody does something new, they're always the first to either succeed and or fail. Like, a lot of people consider the Dreamcast a failure. I don't think the Dreamcast was a failure. It was a great system. It didn't have the backing it needed from its own parent company, which made it die. Because Sega Japan and Sega America kept fighting each other and bringing out useless systems like the Sega Saturn, which I loved.
The Saturn and the 32X.
But they brought the 32X.
The CD 32X even.
Everything. It's like, why did you do that?
Yeah, actually, I just finished reading a book about Sega, and I think the thing with the Dreamcast is it was a great console, but Sega didn't have the money to support it. It was a ridiculously massive undertaking, and they just, after the flop that was the Saturn, they weren't able to financially support the Dreamcast. Had they had some money in their coffers, it could have been a huge success.
Okay, well,
that's the thing with Google. I mean, they have the money.
Just for the record, the Sega Saturn technically wasn't a flop in Japan because of a man named Sega Tsuchiro, but that's another story entirely. So,
The Sega Saturn flourished in Japan because they released pretty much every game under the sun in Japan, and it was the fighter's console.
Yes, the Sega Saturn.
Right.
PlayStation market.
There was the only place you can go to get an arcade perfect copy version of a game of a fighting game.
All right.
It embarrassed the PlayStation versions.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird thing to develop for. And that's a big thing for Google. I mean, they have to look at these kind of lessons of the past. And even Nintendo, for their kind of down years, they were known for making things difficult for developers. With the N64, GameCube even, with the Wii and the Wii U. Those consoles weren't friendly to developers, and Google needs to kind of avoid that. I think, and I want to get all of your thoughts on this before we wrap it up. We're a Nintendo podcast, so from Nintendo's perspective, I don't really see the Google Stadia as much of a threat to Nintendo as it would be to Microsoft or PlayStation.
I agree.
For me personally, I could see myself buying the Stadia and enjoying the heck out of it and playing games that I would have played on those consoles on that, assuming, you know, those input lag concerns and the price point, we haven't even mentioned the price point, are appropriate. But for Nintendo, the Switch is so different, that ability to bring it with you everywhere you go and kind of play these ridiculous, like these full-on Mario titles, these big first-party Nintendo titles. I think that it's still kind of different enough. Now, I didn't realize that if you're on a public Wi-Fi, you could potentially play Stadia on your iPad. From what I understand, from what Keith's told us, so I guess it might be more of a direct competitor than I thought originally. But I still kind of stand by. I think the Switch is still kind of different enough to do better against. If the Stadia was successful, I still think Nintendo would be able to withstand that.
If the Stadia is successful, it is a threat to Nintendo because everything the Switch can do, it can do. I can play it on my phone. I can add a controller to my phone. Those adapters that came out many years ago that hooked up a controller or a PlayStation controller or an Xbox controller to your phone, expect those to come back in a big way. I can play it on my tablet. I can play it on my laptop. So the portability is there. It's going to be...
There's internet connection.
The internet connection and the games. Nintendo has always been in a unique position. How that stays is totally up to them, because as you see, they're putting their games out on different platforms. They're branching out to mobile. We don't know if they plan on putting more games out like that, but as it is for right now, if you want a full-blown Mario experience or a Zelda experience, you can only get that on Nintendo's platforms. You can't say that right now for a lot of other games, like third-party games. You can't say that.
Yeah, and that's my biggest thing is that could they be a threat? Yes. Will they be a threat? Not immediately, because what's the biggest thing when a new console or gaming system comes out? What are the launch titles? We don't know when this thing is launching, and so by that extension, we could say, oh, they're going to have, you know, their in-game games, and they're going to have, like, these third-party titles like Doom Eternal and whatever. Like, oh, that's all well and good, but how many is going to come out at launch? And
I will tell you this. I'm sorry to cut you off. I really do think that showing off Doom Eternal as a game coming out on the Stadia was a bad idea. It was a really bad idea, because the second people had a chance to check that game out on the floor, they were like, "This game is laggy as all hell."
Okay.
So, but you know, that's the thing. It's like, okay, sure, we have some, you know, third party titles from Bethesda, and I understand why they show that, to show that they have this big time third party developer, like, which is what the Switch did when they did their launch event with and they showed off Skyrim, which was fine. But that's not going to carry them. And then there's the question of, okay, how frequently are these games going to release? Because that's the other problem with a new console, is that you're asking us to invest in a title that we may know what's coming out, or we don't know what's coming out. And since this is a new system, we don't know what's coming out. At least not yet. With Nintendo, you always know what to expect, more or less. With Sony, you have a library, and you know that they're always expanding it. Xbox has been kind of inconsistent, and their sales have shown that. But we have nothing, no idea what to expect with Google. Yes, they have their own in-game studio run by Jade Raymond. That's awesome. But what are they going to produce? And will it be quality? And will it matter if we don't have the internet connection to play these games?
Yep, and that's the big thing. Yeah. That is, if anything, the biggest factor right now.
Agreed. So, for me, I'm saying the Switch, which again has already sold well over 30 million, it's right on the heels of the Xbox One, despite only being out 2 years. It's going to have a huge year this year with titles like Yoshi and Fire Emblem and Pokemon
and other Zelda titles. And Mario.
Zelda and Mario and Animal House. Oh my gosh, Animal House. Yes! Animal House! Animal House on Switch! Food fight! No, Animal Crossing! And Luigi's Mansion 3, these are all system sellers, and we know that's going to move. We don't know what's going to move the Google system. So until they become that true killer app, I have nothing to fear. And
there's also something to think about. There has never been a full four-way race long term.
Yeah.
Drops out.
Yeah, I guess Xbox kind of jumped in the picture right as Sega bowed out.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. And then the early days of the Atari, everyone was coming out at their own leisure. So, yeah. And that's the thing though, is that we weren't sure if Xbox was gonna make it, and then they had games like Halo and like Chaos and certain other titles to make us believe. We have to know what games will make us believe for Google, and that's a high order given the quality that these now established brands, even Xbox, have done. So
they can always pull an Epic Games and buy everybody's stuff.
So yeah, maybe that's the lesson here, is that maybe you shouldn't have your own system. You should just have your own store and offer good rates to the developers who bring the stuff to them. It worked for Metro Exodus.
Do you really want to talk about that and how bad that was? And they actually put out an article. They talked about that. It's like, you know, we didn't mean to do that. We're really sorry for doing that. And I'm like, you're really
sorry for
screwing over people who already have that game pre-order on Steam for over, you know, 6-7 months. You're sorry about that? Or you're sorry that people are complaining that you did that?
Well, apparently, but if you saw the article that came out recently.
That article was dumb.
Dumb. It's not dumb when you're saying that you got 2.5 times the sales as the last Metro game on Steam on a brand new store.
So you got 2.5 the amount of sales on a game that came out 6 years ago and came out twice and you didn't tell us which one you're talking about.
It was Last Light.
Last Light came out twice.
Whatever.
That's what I'm talking about. They didn't say which one. Was it the original Last Light? Or Last Light? Or was it the Redux? The updated version?
I would imagine since that Redux wasn't in the title, that it was the original Last Light.
They haven't said. And you say 2.5 million. Who's to say if it was on Steam, you would have made 4 million?
I didn't say 2.5 million. I said no, it made 2.5 times.
Right. Who's to say it could have made more if it wasn't? We don't know. Hey, I made 2.5 more times more on this one. Okay, great. But what if you would have made like 5 times more over here? You don't know that. You don't have any data. You can say, oh, great, we did this. Okay, that's nice. That's like me saying, hey, you know, the Switch sold more than the Xbox 360. Okay, that's nice. Doesn't mean anything. I'm glad the developers got their money and they can keep doing stuff. And how much of that money was people who pre-ordered the game on Steam?
So, yeah, Google Stadia.
Google Stadia. You brought me on to be technical. This is what happens.
And you went off the rails. But hey, this is NEP. That's what we do all the time. Isn't that right, Will? Moving on.
Hey.
So, but yeah, it's the Google Stadia is something we're definitely going to be looking out for and looking for news on in the future as we get closer to its launch, whenever that is.
Oh yeah, I'm harassing Google on a daily basis. Like, hey, I would love to be involved with this. Hey, come on. We would love to help develop it. I mean, what better way? I mean, yeah, you want to get your big YouTubers, but how about the people that aren't big users, people that actually play games?
Right, right, exactly. Especially that's something, the big thing they need to prove is that they can appeal to the actual gamer.
All right, so with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes. Last week we asked you a question. Do you think Smash Bros. Ultimate will get another Fighter Pass? 0% of you said 10 characters, which was the rumor. 75% said 5 characters, and 25% said no, we will not get another Fighter Pass.
Interesting. Alright, so obviously our poll question today will be about the Google Stadia, include all the appropriate hashtags, Tyler. Will the Google Stadia affect the Nintendo Switch at all? A, yes. B, no. C, depends on games and requirements. D, I have no idea. No, D should be the Epic Game Store. Alright, so let us know your thoughts on, of course, Google Stadia and all the news we've talked about today. And we will see you next time. So, for King Koopa Keith, Tellius Tyler, and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. You made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.